Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. How many of you are this evening experiencing some distress because you're not pleased with yourself? And how many of you are experiencing some distress because other people are not pleased with you? Or to be more focused, how many of you are feeling some distress because you are displeased with yourself, or other people are displeased with you? The really simple answer and resolution to the displeasure lies in the words, it's because you don't know who you are. If you knew who you were, you wouldn't indulge the feeling of not being pleased with yourself. Because who you are is too wonderful to be displeased with. I've said before that in the whole time I was growing up, my mother never let me forget who I was. Unfortunately, you did not have mothers or fathers who could constantly remind you of who you are. My mother constantly reminded me of the ultimacy of my being. That God was my father, and I was divine. That I had a heritage that was immaculate. Yes, I sometimes heard that as a level of responsibility that I therefore had that no one else had. And sometimes I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But the fact is that because I was never allowed to forget who I was, and that my source was divine, not human, I never was able to fully succumb to the mutually agreed upon definitions that all my buddies wanted me to join in, or even any of the adults around me. I am, every time we get together, reminding you of who you really are. You experience distress with yourself because you believe you are who you think you are, who you have been educated to think you are. You are like a child of royalty who was stolen away from his royal parents, you might say, and were brought up with a common man, and had no sense of your birthright or your heritage. And then one day you're found by the royal family, and you're brought back home, and you're told that you're not the common lot, that you are royalty. But you have grown up and acquired all of your concepts about yourself from those with whom you were living. And it's not possible for you to just suddenly feel royal. But if you're constantly reminded of it, if you're constantly reminded of your real heritage, it becomes easier and easier for you to abandon and or invalidate and abandon the definitions you've made up and made commitment to. I know that I'm being very repetitious, but the repetition needs to be made. The sentence is so simple, and it needs to be remembered. You are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. You are divine. You are the son, the daughter, the offspring, the child of God, God's self-expression. And you are employing ultimate capacities all the time because they're the only capacities you have available to you. You are using ultimate capacities every day, every moment, even though you're using them to create a sense of limitation, activities of limitation, activities of overcoming limitation. But the ultimate one that you are, the ultimate one that you are attempting to access, to become like, you are right now. Please, as you go through the next week, bring this thought to the foreground of your mind frequently. Even if everything that's going on seems to argue against it and prove to you that it can't be true, be the mother you don't have reminding yourself of who you are, or the father you don't have to remind you who you are. You be it. Remind yourself of it. The more you remind yourself of it, the more curiosity you are going to have to explore and employ these ultimate capacities more fully. You've got to remind yourself that you have capacities that you're not using fully, so that you might dare to experiment, for lack of better words. Play with looking at everything with a willingness to see the more that's there, the more that I'm telling you is there, than what you're seeing. Let there be moments of willingness to be more intimate with a salt shaker that's on the table in the restaurant you're having lunch in, or the chair you're sitting in. Anything. Let there be moments where you abandon your routine to just be present with something, with an openness and a curiosity to see what you may never have seen before. And then go on about your business. But get into the habit of even momentarily having the curiosity and the willingness to be present with something, to experience the more that's there. This is the way you will break the habit. The persistence of misperception rather than the persistence of vision. The persistence of the misperception of who and what you are, that you're so willing to believe and then berate yourself for. If you knew you were royalty, you would say, I don't have to put up with this shit. You see? But you just think you're the common man. You just think you're a mortal. Working his way through this lifetime. Well, you're not. And you need to be a little bit more active and vehement in your denial of the idea that that is all you are. Be a little bit more aggressive. Be a little bit more self-disciplined to the point where you at least remind yourself frequently during the day. Well, they think I'm awful, but, and they're distressed with me, but, my Father is God. And my inheritance is the fullness of His being. And my capacities are what He has laid down in me. I am more than they think I am. And I don't have to respond like some inconsequential turd. You see? I may be unhappy with myself, but I don't have to be. If you have to pawn it off on me, fine. Say, Raj says I don't have to be. But at least remind yourself that you have an option. There is another way to look at this. If you remind yourself of it, you will remember to try. And trying to be in a new way, bringing the curiosity necessary to having a new experience, is what lays the groundwork for what? A sudden shift of perception. But it's going to take practice. And let the practice be fun. Let it be lighthearted. Paul said, not Paul, Tuttle, Paul, the disciple said, now are we the sons of God. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when He, meaning Jesus, when He shall appear, we shall be like Him. Why? Because we shall see Him as He is. Interesting, isn't it? It doesn't say we will recognize Him because of who He is, and He will impress us with who He is, and thereby we will know who He is. It says, and we will then find ourselves to be like Him. It says we will be like Him because we will see Him as He is. We will see Him as He is in reality. Well, in a way, it's sort of like which came first, the chicken or the egg. Are you going to be like me because you see me? Or are you going to see me as like you because you see yourself correctly? It's a moot point. But the key is that now are you my brothers. Now are you the sons and daughters of God, the offspring, the expression of God. And it's time for you to recognize yourself. And in order to recognize yourself, you're going to have to abandon your confidence that you know that you are simply a mortal, a flesh and blood body that has a temporary lifespan, and afterwards, the ultimate may be your experience. No. Now, the ultimate is going on. So you've got to start today. letting that fact abide in you like a glowing light that gets your attention. And now is the world the kingdom of heaven. And you've got to let that idea pulsate and glow in your mind and get your attention so that you will dare to look at it all. With innocent eyes, fresh eyes, not preoccupied with past definitions. Let's go to the book. The section is entitled The Decision to Forget. Unless you know something, you cannot dissociate it. Dissociate, separate from yourself, or separate from its source. Unless you know something, you cannot dissociate it. Okay, let's render this more understandable. When you said, "But Father, I'd rather see it my way," and got your bill of divorcement, you were dissociating yourself from the Father. That's all. You got a divorce. A separation occurred. That's dissociation. That was the dissociation. Now, mind you, it's well to remember that just saying, "Father, I'd rather see it my way," does not constitute a dissociation. To have the thought doesn't mean anything. But to actually say, "My definition of this is such and such," at that point, dissociation occurred because you were saying, "This thing is not what the Father is being right there. It is what I say it is." And at that point, you established a sense of independence. And that's when the dissociation occurred. When you actually made a decision that a thing was what you said it was rather than what the Father was being right there. Now, unless you know something, you cannot dissociate it. Knowledge, therefore, precedes dissociation. And dissociation is nothing more than a decision to forget. Now, here's another practical aspect of this statement. We were talking last week about the fact that what the Father knows is your true knowing, is your capacity to know what a thing is truly. And the Father does not know something for himself alone. His knowing constitutes your true knowing because it was placed in you by virtue of God extending himself right where you are. Now, if dissociation has occurred, in other words, if you are experiencing everything with the meanings you're giving it, rather than what it truly is, it means that you did know originally what it was, which means that right now you really do know what everything is. In other words, if you are experiencing dissociation, it means that you did know. And if you did know, you do know. Nothing has been lost. Nothing has to be regained through mental gymnastics or hard work. You're at the point of perfection and must understand yourself therefrom. If knowledge precedes dissociation, then if you're experiencing dissociation by reversal, you know that you are the ultimate right now. Do you see what I'm trying to say? It's another way of saying, if you are experiencing a misperception of something, there's something real there to be misperceived. The ultimate is going on. It's the only thing confronting you. If you're having a misperception of it, what it really is right there. And so, you can say, by reversal, if I am misperceiving this orchid, it means the real orchid is there. Not off in the by and by, after you die, but right here, right now. If you're experiencing a misperception, the thing that you're misperceiving is fully and actively present. The ultimate is here. If you are experiencing life through dissociation, then it means you do know what it really is. And you are just in a momentary state of denial of what it is. So, the kingdom of heaven isn't off in the future, and your capacity to recognize it isn't off in the future. If you're experiencing dissociation and misperception, it is the proof you need that the real thing is present, and you know what it is right now. You do know what it is. I must point this out to you so that you don't indulge in the idea that seeing everything for what it is and recognizing and experiencing who you really are is not something that will arrive as a result of great struggle on your part, of standing tall and trying to be more than you are, of being a caterpillar that has to go through a process of metamorphosis in order to become a butterfly, something that the caterpillar wasn't yet. You see what I'm saying? You are the ultimate right now. Again, unless you know something, you cannot dissociate it. Knowledge, therefore, precedes dissociation. Knowing precedes the experience of a belief. And dissociation is nothing more than a decision to forget. Father, I'd rather see it my way. I choose to forget what a thing really is. I choose to forget my source. I choose to define myself and to define everything else. I choose to forget who I am, because if I don't forget who I am, I won't be able to successfully convince myself that my definitions are true and real. So it's a decision to forget. What has been forgotten then appears to be fearful, but only because the dissociation was an attack on truth. I disagree with you, God. This is an orchid, and it grows from a seed, not from the impulse of creation that you are. It grows from a seed. And you know what? I'm going to determine that if it doesn't get watered, it will wither and die and be no more, you see. I don't care if you say it's eternal, God. I say that it's mortal. I say that without proper treatment, it will die, and that plant will forevermore not be. See? It's a disagreement with God. It's a standing at odds with God. It's an attack on God. You are fearful. You are fearful because you have forgotten. And you have replaced your knowledge, your knowing, by an awareness of dreams, fantasies, imaginations, because you are afraid of your dissociation, not of what you have dissociated. Let's be clear on this. You have replaced your knowledge, true knowing, by an awareness of dreams, things you made up, because you are afraid of your dissociation, not of what you have dissociated. You are afraid of your act of divorcement and what it says about you. You are afraid of your act, your misbehavior, your disobedience. You are afraid of your dissociation, not of what you have dissociated. Even in this world's therapy, when dissociated material is accepted, it ceases to be fearful, for the laws of mind always hold. Even in the dream, the laws of mind hold. The question has been asked at times, why are we afraid to wake up? You are afraid to wake up because in your imagined independent state, you've lost your sense of balance, you've lost your perspective, you've lost the sense of your source, you no longer recognize your royalty. And at the bottom line, you know that this lack of remembering of what you are was an attempt to be at odds with your father, your source, and therefore was a denial of your reality and the truth of what you are, and you feel vulnerable, and the assumption is that you are guilty, and that once you dare to say, God, help. God, I want to let you back into my life. You will be punished. But the fact is that when you let God back in, you let in the truth of you. You let in the stability of your being. You let in the experience of the eternality of your being, and you let in the recognition that your imaginations accomplished nothing, and therefore nothing disobedient was accomplished, and your eternal invulnerability is experienced. You find your safety rather than judgment and punishment. When you let back in what you've dissociated, the experience is wholeness. and wholeness is unconflicted, and the concept of punishment is meaningless. Yet, continuing, to give up the dissociation of reality, in other words, truly with a capital R, yet to give up the dissociation of reality brings more than merely lack of fear. It brings more than just peace. It brings more than just relief. It brings more than just the absence of anxiety and fear. In this decision lie joy and peace and the glory of creation. I tell you, as I've told you before, that absolutely everything you're experiencing, the flower, the stem, the leaves, the roots, the bowl that the plant is in, every aspect is awesome. It pulses with and generates love on and on and on. It is utterly divine and awesome. Right now, right here, this plant. And each one of you, as you sit there, are awesome. You pulse with love. You pulse with divine illumination. The experience of you, and I would say the experience of each other from each of your points of view, are awesome, overwhelmingly glorious. I say overwhelmingly because it far exceeds what you might imagine. Right here, right now. To give up the dissociation of reality brings more than merely lack of fear. In this decision lie joy and peace and the glory of creation. Offer the Holy Spirit only your will to remember. Well, let me tell you this. The moment you begin to express genuine curiosity, you are offering the Holy Spirit only your will to remember. So offer the Holy Spirit only your will to remember, for he retains the knowledge of God and of yourself for you. And I keep reminding you, as it said earlier in the course, the Holy Spirit is nothing more than your right mind. So, offer the Holy Spirit only your will to remember, for your right mind retains the knowledge of God and of yourself for you, waiting for your acceptance, waiting for your curiosity, waiting for your desire to see outside the box. Give up gladly everything, all of your definitions, all of your preconceptions, all of your confidences that didn't arise out of a connectedness with the Father. Give up gladly everything that would stand in the way of your remembering, for God is in your memory, and his voice will tell you that you are part of him when you are willing to remember him and know your own reality again. Well, like I said, you didn't have a mother to remind you of your reality, but I'm reminding you of it. And you start reminding yourself of it, whether it seems true or not. Let nothing in this world delay your remembering of him, for in this remembering is the knowledge of yourself. Practical translation. When you let God in, you're letting in your source. When you let in your source, you remember who you are. You snap back into your right mind. And so, let nothing in this world, which means let nothing in all of your current definitions, delay your remembering of him, for in this remembering is the knowledge of yourself. That's how you remember who you are, by no longer denying your source. That's the only way you can remember who you are. Now listen to this. To remember is merely to restore to your mind what is already there. Neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it, you're there. To remember is merely to restore to your mind what is already there. Again, this is not a process of achieving something that you aren't yet, and it's not a matter of acquiring what you don't have yet. To remember is merely to restore to your mind what is already there. You do not make what you remember. You merely accept again what has been made but was rejected, dissociated, separated from you. The ability to accept truth in this world is the perceptual counterpart of creating in the kingdom. God will do his part if you will do yours. And his return in exchange for yours is the exchange of knowledge for perception. Another way of saying that is, you will receive the experience of knowing in place of what you've made up, in place of the perceptions you've created, the definitions you've created. But I'll tell you something, the exchange has to occur. Just as you, in order to dissociate or get a divorce from the Father, were required to not just say you wanted to see things your way, you had to actually give a definition to a thing and then give your preference to it. To come back home, you have to not only be willing to say, Father, I'm willing to exchange my definitions for the real meanings, you actually have to go ahead and do it. And that's why I'm encouraging you at any time during the day with any object in front of you to let there be an intimate moment where you're willing to see and desire to see, you're curious to experience the awesomeness, the gloriousness of that thing, the gloriousness of what the Father is being right there, which you're not currently seeing because you do think it's just a material object. You're actually going to have to be willing to let the exchange happen, which means you're going to have to be willing to let the new experience in. Nothing is beyond his will for you. God's will for you. But signify your will to remember him, and behold, he will give you everything but for the asking. anything complicated here? Difficult process? No. It will be yours for the asking. Oh, that's too easy. No. Well, everything we're talking about is ultimately easy. Of course, the teachers and the developers of curriculums for awakening, religious systems and so on, will give you complex processes. And they'll tell you that it will be difficult because you are a sinner to start with. You're already on lousy ground with not much of a basis for deserving to ask for enlightenment and expect to get it, you see? Now, when you attack, you are denying yourself. What does that mean? When you said, "Father, I'd rather see it my way," which was an attack on what really is, because you wanted to give preference to making your own definitions, you ended up unexpectedly losing the experience of who you were. You became the recipient of the result of your decision. And now you think you're blackballed. God has blackballed you. And it's going to be difficult to get back into the kingdom of heaven. You're going to have to go through the day of judgment. You see, you've been blackballed because of your disobedience. You were the recipient of your decision to disregard God. God wasn't the recipient of anything, you see. When you attack, you are denying yourself. You are denying yourself the remembrance and the experience of what you divinely are. That's what has happened. You are specifically teaching yourself that you are not what you are. Your denial of reality precludes the acceptance of God's gift, because you have accepted something else in its place, an imagination that you are giving preference to. If you understand that the misuse of defenses always constitutes an attack on truth, and truth is God, you will realize why this is always fearful. Well, it's always fearful because ultimately you're the recipient of the attack. And you've already been the recipient of it, and you're already feeling vulnerable because of it. You live with an undercurrent of fear and insecurity, and you think it's just the state of life. It's the way life is. But it isn't. It's just that the kingdom of heaven looks fearful to you when you're saying it's something else, because you are truly afraid that what it really is will manage to register with you and undo your so-called creations, all of the definitions you've made up, and all of the definitions that you've agreed with everyone else about, so that numbers give strength to your misperception, you see. You're afraid that reality is going to uncover the invalidity of everything you've made up. If you understand that the misuse of defenses always constitutes an attack on truth, and truth is God, you will realize why this is always fearful. If you further recognize that you are part of God, you will understand why it is that you always attack yourself first. You see, the ego's thought system is such that it targets you. It says you are unworthy. It says you are a sinner. It says you were born in sin. It says you are the underdog, and it will be difficult to get out from under that status because you deserve it, you see. Everyone is down on himself first. If you're feeling uneasy, if you're feeling vulnerable, if you're never at peace, why, there must be something wrong with you. And that's a little difficult to take, so then you say, well, no, it's everybody else. And it's not you, and it's not everybody else. It's just that you've forgotten who you are. Continuing, if you realized the complete havoc this makes of your peace of mind, you could not make such an insane decision. You make it only because you still believe that it can get you something you want. And the only thing you ever wanted was to be able to define everything yourself, thinking that would be like being God, and that it would give you a pleasure and a satisfaction of authorizing things, you see. And you make that decision only because you still believe that it can get you something you want. It follows then that you want something other than peace of mind, but you have not considered what it must be. You say, gee, I didn't expect this just by saying, but Father, I'd rather see it my way. I didn't expect that I would forget who I was. You see, I just wanted to be able to authorize a few things, like Mickey Mouse in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. He just wanted to be able to authorize a few things. He didn't know that, you know, things could go amok. You didn't realize you would forget who you were, and you would lose conscious connection with your source. You would lose the experience of the integrity of your being. You didn't realize it. You didn't realize that's what you were asking for, or you would never have asked for it. If you realize the complete havoc this makes of your peace of mind, you could not make such an insane decision. You make it only because you still believe that it can get you something you want. What did Mickey do? Things started to go awry. Too many buckets of water and too many brooms bringing them in, filling up the castle. And what did he do? Did he go to the sorcerer and say, help? No, he waved the wand some more. It follows then that you want something other than peace of mind, but you have not considered what it must be. Yet the logical outcome of your decision is perfectly clear if you will look at it. By deciding against your reality, you have made yourself vigilant against God and His kingdom. Why? Because you are afraid that it will undo what you believe you have authorized, and it will take away any supposed authority you thought you had gained, and therefore it will take away what you require to be there in order to feel a sense of self-respect, as long as you don't remember who you are. And, continuing, it is this vigilance against God and His kingdom that makes you afraid to remember Him. When the sorcerer finally came down the stairs and Mickey saw him, he cowered. Mickey cowered. He was afraid of what had the answer. You see? Now, you, continuing, you have not attacked God, and you do love Him. You just thought you attacked God, and you now just think you're afraid of Him. You have not attacked God, that's the truth of it, and you do love Him, and that's the truth of it. Can you change your reality? No, you can imagine that you can and that you have, but you can't. No one can will to destroy himself. When you think you are attacking yourself, it is a sure sign that you hate what you think you are. And this, and only this, can be attacked by you. Poor Mickey. I'm sure he got very mad at himself for all of the ruckus that he was creating, but he was unwilling to abandon doing what made it worse. Continuing, what you think you are can be hateful, and what this strange image makes you do can be very destructive. Ha ha ha. The joke's on you. Yet, the destruction is no more real than the image. That's where the joke's on you. None of it is real. Yet the destruction is no more real than the image, although those who make idols do worship them. The idols are nothing. Your imaginations are nothing. Your definitions are nothing. The conclusions you've come to about yourself not only aren't true, they're nothing. The idols are nothing, but their worshipers are the sons of God in sickness. You are each the son or daughter of God, utilizing ultimate capacities, utterly divine capacities, well or poorly. The idols are nothing, but the worshipers are something ultimate, the sons of God. What? Behaving poorly, in sickness. You see? You didn't become something else. You didn't become a mortal. You didn't become an orphan. The idols are nothing, but their worshippers are the sons of God in sickness. God would have them released, would have you released from their sickness and returned to His mind. Well, if you're returned to His mind, you're returned to your right mind. To be returned to His mind is to be returned to your right mind. He will not limit your power to help them. Let's back up. The idols are nothing, but their worshippers are the sons of God in sickness. God would have them released from their sickness and returned to His mind. He will not limit your power to help them, meaning your brothers and sisters. He will not limit your power to help them because He has given it to you. Do not be afraid of it because it is your salvation. Oh, but like I said last week, you're like someone who says, well, I wouldn't mind being gay if nobody had to know about it. Well, you've been given the power to help your brothers and sisters wake up, return their mind to God, return their mind to the place of excellence that is within them by reflecting back to them, as I'm doing with you, what is true about them in whatever language works. And to help them remember the truth about them is your salvation as well. Because what you give away, you get to keep. What you extend becomes yours. That's the way it works. Do not be afraid of it, because it is your salvation. What comforter can there be for the, what? Sick children of God. The sick, ultimate expressions of God. What comforter can there be for the sick children of God except His power through you? If you want to remember who you are, you've got to let God back in. If you want your brother to remember who he is, you've got to remember God when you're looking at your brother. Remember, continuing, that it does not matter where in the sonship he is accepted. It can be right in the same room where you are. He is always accepted for all, and when your mind receives Him, the remembrance of... Let's back up. Remember that it does not matter where in the sonship He, God, is accepted. Like I said, can be right there with you. He, God, is always accepted for all. Just as God does not know for Himself only, you do not know for yourself only. I didn't say think, I said know. When you have the experience of knowing, which is far different from thinking or imagining, you know it for all. It is accepted for all. Remember that it does not matter where in the sonship He, God, is accepted. He is always accepted for all. And when your mind receives Him, the remembrance of Him, God, awakens throughout the sonship. There are no private thoughts. And there's no private knowing. When you have the experience of knowing the truth, you know it for the whole sonship. The whole sonship is blessed. Listen to this. Heal your brothers by accepting God for them. When you care enough about your brother to remember God right there where they are, no matter how they're behaving, you provide the environment in which a miracle can occur for your brother. And in the extension of the recognition of what they divinely are, you are blessed by making what you are clear to yourself. You get to keep what you give. Heal your brothers simply by accepting God for them. Your minds are not separate, and God has only one channel for healing, because he has but one son. God is a singularity. What God knows is forever and infinite and always, indivisible, unchangeable. Your minds are not separate, and God has only one channel for healing, because he has but one son. His remaining communication link with all his children joins them together and them to him. Well, you know, how is this going to happen if you are what you think you are and you do not know of your royalty? It can't. And that's why you've got to stop working up to becoming something more than you are. And you've got to dare to stand right where you are and understand yourself from an ultimate place. Well, how do you do that? Well, you can't do it by yourself. You've got to invite the experience in. You've got to say, "Help, God. I want to know the truth right here. I don't want to know the truth about how bad things are. I've got all of that figured out myself. I want to know what the truth is here about my brother, about my world, about myself." And I understand from Raj that the only way I will get to know the truth about myself is to connect with you again. Annul my divorce. Only in this way can you present something new, something outside the box, something from outside the box, something from outside all of the mutually agreed upon definitions that everyone has been bound by. And when you do that, although you have no evidence of it yet, when you do that, not just the one you've been willing to bless is blessed, but the whole brotherhood feels the impulse and movement of love that has motivated an ultimate act by you, which has claimed your being from the standpoint of its ultimacy, of being at the point of perfection. And your brother, who is in need of healing, is blessed, and every brother who is already awake is blessed, because the pulse of love is a universal movement that everyone feels. His, God's, remaining communication link with all his children joins them together and them to him. It uncovers the singularity once again. To be aware of this is to heal them, because it is the awareness that no one is separate, and so no one is sick. Remember, back above, the idols are nothing, but their worshippers are the sons of God in sickness. experiencing a sickness of the mind, you might say. To believe that a son of God can be sick is to believe that part of God can suffer. Love cannot suffer because it cannot attack. The remembrance of love, therefore, brings what? Not judgment and punishment, invulnerability with it. Do not side with sickness in the presence of a son of God, even if he believes in it. Now, this applies in two ways. It applies to those who think they are ill with a disease. But you do not want to side with sickness in the presence of a son of God, meaning you do not want to join with him in his false definitions of himself or of the kingdom of heaven that he thinks is just the world, full of material flowers and bugs and human beings and trees that are far from ultimate, and that someday he'll die out of with a chance of experiencing something ultimate. You do not want to join or side with sickness of that sort in the presence of a son of God, even if he believes in it. For your acceptance of God in him acknowledges the love of God which he has forgotten. Every night, Paul says a prayer. He asks for healing for everyone, and actually he uses the word every when, meaning beyond the current sense of time and location, everywhere, every when. He asks for healing for every when, as opposed to everyone, every when, who is asking for healing, even if they are only expressing it as hope with little faith. People can go to bed hungry at night and hope that maybe they'll find something to eat tomorrow, and they can hope it, but not have much faith that it will come to pass. And Paul knows, not intellectually, but from a revealed level, that when he asks for this for them, he brings the faith that they don't have. And so he asks for what they're asking for with the faith they don't have, and thereby does it for them, brings the faith into the equation for them, because at the moment they can't see it, they can't feel it. Your recognition of him, your brother, as part of God, teaches him the truth about himself which he is denying. Would you strengthen his denial of God and thus lose sight of yourself? Or would you remind him of his wholeness and remember your Creator with him? See? That's what you get to keep when you extend it to your brother. To believe a son of God is sick is to worship the same idol he does. God created love, not idolatry. All forms of idolatry are caricatures of creation. Caricatures, you know, cartoons, imaginations, fantasies. Not anything you could really find in the world, although a Volkswagen comes close these days. God created love, not idolatry. All forms of idolatry are caricatures of creation. Pictures you've created in your mind and defined and made commitment to. All forms of idolatry are caricatures of creation taught by sick minds. Minds that aren't clear, in other words. Minds that are confused, minds that are conflicted, which are too divided to know that creation, the act of creation, shares power and never usurps it. Sickness is idolatry because it is the belief that power can be taken from you. Yet this is impossible because you're not behind the point of perfection. Because you are part of God, are current, present tense, are part of God who is all power. A conflicted mind is the only definition of sickness there really is. What you call sickness, physical sickness, is simply the only way you can see the kingdom of heaven or a part of the kingdom of heaven when you're looking through the lens of conflict and fear and everything that's associated with it. And the only reason you would indulge in being conflicted is because you don't know who you are. Remember this, because the answer to the conflict lies in remembering who you are, that you are royalty, you are divine, you are ultimate. And you don't have to put up with this shit. You see what I'm saying? You need to arrive at a feeling in you that says, what I am experiencing is inappropriate, unacceptable. I don't have to be experiencing this. Well, got to be careful because you could say, because I'm above it all. No, you're not better than it. You are the absence of it. You are the singularity. You are the presence of God in whom all of this shit is absent. It doesn't have to be gotten rid of. It has to be seen for what it is. Something that it's not your birthright to be experiencing, and therefore it is something you can't truly be experiencing, and therefore it is something that cannot continue to present itself to you as though it is real, because you're not going to validate it any longer. Not because you've conquered it. You're just not going to be fooled any longer. Because you're remembering who you are. And then remember this. When you feel like saying, I don't have to put up with this shit, and you add that so-and-so is dishing out, be careful that you don't fall into the trap, because you've got to follow that by saying, and neither does he or she have to put up with this shit, because he or she is truly the presence of God that is the non-existence of what seems to be triggering their behavior. It isn't real for them either. You see? Then, your statement that you don't have to put up with this shit that they seem to be dishing out does not become an egotistical statement of position relative to them, because you immediately follow that by bringing them into the circle that they don't deserve it either, because it's not the truth about them either. And what is divinely true about them is they're not behind the point of perfection, and they need to understand themselves therefrom. And therefore, you're not going to arrogantly overcome their shit that they're laying on you. You are going to be in a way that is recognizably love, and that provides the environment for them to experience a sudden shift of perception, a miracle. Now we are going to stop here, because you need a week to digest what I've said before we can contend with what comes next. Sometimes you all move too fast because there is such eagerness and impatience that you don't let something sink in and gel with you, providing a basis for what is to come to be heard more completely, more fully. So, enjoy this week, and remember to let there be many points during your day of intimacy with any object that's in your immediate vicinity, where you bring a curiosity to see the awesome gloriousness of real creation happening in front of you. And I use the word intimacy on purpose, because intimacy requires attention. And I want you to, even if it's for 30 seconds at a time, to really bring your full attention to this practice. And remember that you're engaging in this practice to help trigger the remembrance of the fact that what I'm asking you to do is the normal, ongoing, eternal state of being conscious. And so you're just inviting little tastes of it here and there, lightly, without a sense of overcoming sin, and letting a sudden shift of a perception occur, if it occurs. Remember, you've got to be the mother or the father who doesn't let you forget what you divinely are. And just because you didn't, doesn't mean that you really are the slob you think you are. Okay. I look forward to being with you next week. And I love you all.